Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, March 17th, 2023. Happy St. Patrick's Day, one and all. Wow, what else? Mayor's race. I feel like I've been talking mayor's race straight for the last month and still got another 2 weeks and counting to go in this thing. It's like an endurance test. So for what's in the news, I think I'll cite Twitter. This is something I don't usually do. And I erroneously credit this to Gregory Pratt. He was actually retweeting it. So shout out to Alice Yin, who is an excellent reporter for the Tribune. And Gregory Pratt was retweeting her tweet. So Ben discovers Twitter. It's always an interesting. Anyway, so today, big news in the endorsement game was that Jesus Chuy Garcia, Congressman Chuy Garcia, endorsed Brandon Johnson for mayor of the city of Chicago. It could be a significant endorsement because the Hispanic vote is coveted by both candidates. Each candidate sort of has its base, and the Hispanic vote as a large entity, I forget what portion of the city it is, I don't know, kind of in the undecided category to a certain degree. And Jesus Chuy Garcia, Congressman Garcia, endorsed Brandon Johnson, which prompted the following response. I'm just laughing at this response from Paul Vallis, according to Alice Yin. Vallis shrugged off today's Chuy Garcia endorsement of Brandon Johnson, saying, quote, "I am not concerned about who's endorsing. I'm going to appeal to the rank and file voters." What a joke, Paul Vallis. I mean, what are you, Rodney Dangerfield now? You're going to do stand-up at Zanies? Your endorsements don't matter? Every day you trot out a different endorsement. Every day, who's the latest to endorse Paul Vallis? Then you saturate the TV with your commercials. Jesse White, Walter Burnett. Now, all of a sudden, oh, Brandon Johnson gets an endorsement, and you're like, oh, they don't matter. What a joke, Paul Vallis. So without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce herself. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
I'm Romana Hussein. I'm an editorial board member and columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And she, of course, is a regular on the Ben Jarofsky Show, and I can't thank you enough, Romana. All right. I've been asking all my guests this week, Romana, to weigh in on this and define woke in their terms, because this is one of those instances where we just routinely use a word, and it's just like emerged into the language. And I don't know if anybody really agrees even on what it means. And so it's like this absurd moment where we just use this thing and it has this like general sense. So I'm just asking each and one of my guests, all intelligent people, from the center to the left, that's generally who my guests are, what does woke mean to you? So why don't you take a stab at it?
To me, I guess it's the opposite of being asleep or being unaware. And so for when I hear the word woke, I do think people throw it around a lot. Like, you know, people want to say I'm woke to show how open-minded they are. But it to me, it just means someone who's paying attention to the sensitivities of others. And so that's why the right, they feel like when people are, you know, calling people out for, you know, specific reasons, saying that, you know, they're offended by certain things, it's because they're being sensitive to what may be considered offensive. So I just think it's being aware of other people and other people's feelings. And often, more than not, it tends to be being aware of groups of people or people who have been marginalized in the past. That's what I think, just being aware. So, and I think it was a song from Erykah Badu. I actually read an article a few days ago that she's the one that came up with the word woke. And so since then, it's been kind of, I guess I should say, culturally appropriated. A lot of people don't really know that that word came from her song, but she had mentioned it in a song like years ago. So it's a word that was taken from this artist and has taken on a new meaning for the right wing and for a lot of people on the left too. But it's interesting. It's just interesting how it's become a bad word, just like being a liberal was a bad word for a long time, or, you know, I guess socialist, you know, someone on the left, you know, it's just funny what words get taken over and become bad words for a lot of people. So,
well, it's, okay. You're absolutely right. Shout out Rachel, our guest earlier this week, who pointed out, I think the song is called Master Teacher, where Erykah Badu uses the word, she's a woke. But the way you define it, it's a virtue. I mean, having compassion, having awareness, being sensitive to other people, recognizing that you're not always right, that sometimes you're wrong, and you have to acknowledge when you're wrong. It sounds to me like a virtuous thing, and somehow or other, it's been turned into a word of condemnation. Like, you should be ashamed to be woke. I mean, I have never called myself woke. It's like a word I wouldn't use. I'm a baby boomer. I mean, I'm not using the word woke, okay? Erykah Badu can use it, although she's kind of closer to you in age. But I it's not a word I would use. Do you follow what I'm saying? But to me, it sounds like a virtuous thing. Why would anybody be embarrassed?
Yeah, I don't use it to describe myself either, but I do. I have described it for other people. Like, if they say something that makes sense, like, oh, or like, I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, I didn't know so-and-so was that woke. One of the, just brings to mind, Axl Rose, who's the lead singer of Guns N' Roses. He ended up becoming more woke than like singers like Morrissey, who's unwoke by some of his comments. So I remember, like, it was really funny. Like, I think in 2020 or 2021, somebody said something like, you never would have known on my bingo card that Axl Rose was going to be the one that was woke in 2021 or 2020, whatever it was. So it's just funny. So people use it, you know, when they're shocked that someone's, you know, has like these viewpoints that they didn't think they would have it. So I kind of, I, as a Gen Xer, I use it to describe some other people. I'm like, oh, wow, they're pretty woke for their age. So, or they're woke, or they, you know, I don't use it that much. I have to say, I don't throw it around that much. I feel like the right, at this point in history, I think the right uses the word woke more than any other person on the left. It's just like a word that they've taken and they're throwing it around, and they love it. They love it. They love it as just as much as they love cancel culture. They love saying cancel culture, and they love saying woke right now in this day and age. They also like saying critical race theory. I mean, they're just obsessed with those three phrases right now. So they tend to use the word, those words, more than people on the left do.
Yeah, I think to your first point, you're absolutely correct. The right is quite good at maligning the left and doing it with discipline and routine on a regularity and speaking from the same page. So it with liberal, for instance, the condemnation of the word liberal began in full force with Ronald Reagan, I want to say. And it's to the point where even liberals don't want to call themselves liberals. And so they call themselves progressives, which is kind of funny because you're still a liberal. And what I don't think the right will be as effective with socialists. And I'll tell you why. They may turn socialism into a bad word. I mean, it's already a bad word in this country, you know, this capitalist state to be a socialist. But I don't think they'll shame socialists into running away from the socialist label the way they've shamed liberals from running away from the liberal label, because socialists are proud of being socialists. Again, the only white alderman in the city of Chicago to endorse Brandon Johnson is a socialist, okay? Just point that out, ladies and gentlemen. All you lakefront liberals are hiding under your table, afraid to endorse a black man. That's me speaking, not Romana. I think you're absolutely correct. The right is really good and effective at embarrassing liberals or people to the left, and then the liberals adjust their rhetoric, their world, their view of themselves, and it's like a moral victory in a weird way for the right. You know what I'm saying? And then they just bait the liberals some more, and then we watch. I cringe when I see it, Romana. You know what I'm saying? I cringe when I see liberals run away from the things they supposedly believe in because they don't want to be identified as liberal. I don't know. Do you have a similar reaction?
Yeah, I do. Because people on the right don't get upset when you call them conservative. They're pretty happy about that. So I've never understood why people who hold different opposing views, they let the right define what words are acceptable and what words are offensive. You should be proud of who you are if you're a progressive or a liberal or a lefty. So yeah, I see where you're coming from, and I don't get it why anybody would let the right define what word is bad in America and what word is good in the United States. And I think for the longest time we've been letting the right define what words are good and what words are bad. I mean, they take words like critical race theory. Now it's like everybody's afraid to even say critical race theory because the right has decided that those are bad words.
One more time, I urge all my listeners, if you haven't already, check out Paul Vallis's comments on critical race theory. And then we have a contest. Please explain to me what they mean. The winner of the contest will get something. I don't know what. All right. couple of cultural matters that I want to discuss with you. You, of course, are our correspondent covering Gwyneth Paltrow. I must confess. I must confess, until it was 3 years ago, you opened my mind. I didn't know any of this stuff about her. I don't know if the word wacky is the one I should use, but why not? Some of her wackier consumer schemes. And there was a very funny bit, which I sent you. I know you haven't had a chance to watch it on the Daily Show. Very funny bit where they make fun of her her latest venture. So why don't you update us on Gwyneth Paltrow's latest consumer venture, which I'm sure will reap her a lot more money than you or I will ever make, Romana, writing our columns. Go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so she recently was on a podcast or some sort of interview. And so based on what she said on the podcast, there were two stories that came out. One was where she talks, you know, people basically said she was promoting eating disorder diets by, you know, she was talking about how she goes about her day and what she eats. And she talked about how she drinks bone broth for her lunch. Basically, she wasn't eating anything all day. And she's talking, you know, and then, you know, trust me, people are going to listen to her and eat the way she eats. which is not much. And so people were kind of criticizing her, but that's really nothing new. She's always been kind of this person who talks about what she doesn't eat, which is basically everything. So she's usually just sucking on air. And whenever she does, everybody piles on because it's hilarious, the stuff she said. I mean, I have to tell you, I'm surprised Cal Penn didn't mention how a couple of years ago she talked about how because of her, people are doing yoga now. And of course, all the Indians were all upset because we're like, okay, white woman, you did not invent yoga. And so she kind of like puts her foot in her mouth. But at the same time, there are enough people that listen to what she says and her advice. And so I think during the same interview, so there's two stories that came out. One was about her diet and how restrictive it was. And the other one was about how she gets rectal ozone therapy, which I don't know what that is, but someone said it's kind of like getting a colonoscopy. It's a fancy way of her saying a colonoscopy. But she always talks about weird things that she does to her body, and everybody always, you know, like, again, it's like, it just makes for a news story and everybody starts talking about it. But like I said, you know, even when she makes these, you know, proclamations, there will be people who follow her. You know, she'll put out a vagina candle for like $100 or $300 and it'll get sold out. So clearly she knows what she's doing to a certain extent, and it makes money. So it's just like every time something happens, like, I have to tell you, she starts trending on the internet. So when she did her last interview, and since we talked about her, I thought I had to share with you this morning. I was like, oh, did you see this and that? And so Gwyneth Paltrow's become like, she's become less known for her films these days than for her lifestyle advice and on wellness and fitness.
So help me here. And I know I'm going to sound really ignorant, and I apologize up front for my staggering ignorance. So what is it about Gwyneth Paltrow where if she puts out on Twitter, or I don't know how she gets the message out, but she gets the message out that she's, I don't know, doing anything, covering her body with mud, whatever she's doing. What is it that so many consumers feel compelled to go out and buy the product that she's endorsing, as wacky as it may sound? I need to know. I'm disconnected from that. So help me understand the mentality here.
I'm not someone that understands it either. So you're speaking to the choir. I don't understand it either. The only thing I could think of is, you know, she is an Academy Award winning actress, and, you know, she's someone that's, you know, made a lot of money. So people probably think that, well, you know, when she's saying this and this, this must work. And I guess it works with all celebrities, right? But I would think that at some point there are some celebrities who were famous maybe like 20, 30 years ago. They really can't sell, you know, something like that if they did. But it's something about her. And I think it's like she's just kind of found that niche. And she was one of the first ones to find that health and wellness niche. And so the people who are going to hang on to her are from the same kind of, I guess, from the same kind of like cultures. They move around in the same cultures. And so or move around in the same circles, I should say. And so I just think it's this group of people who have disposable income. And when Gwyneth Paltrow says, like, wear this $5,000 sweater, because I do, then they'll go out and buy it. So yeah, I have to tell you, I don't get it either. And I think it's one of those things where people, because they talk about it so much, it just keeps getting more and more traction. There's people like you and me who, like, you know, obviously we laugh at it when we see this coming out, but there are people that are buying into it. It's a serious business.
All right. So let me put this one to you, since you talked about other celebrities. And when you did that, obviously it hit clicked. Michael Jeffrey Jordan, his sneakers, his gym shoes sell millions worldwide. It's made him a billionaire. Okay. So what's the difference between someone buying a sneaker or a gym shoe endorsed or designed by Michael Jeffrey Jordan and someone buying a candle that emanates the aroma of a vagina because it's been endorsed by Gwyneth Paltrow. Help me out here. I think I have an answer, but I want to hear your answer.
Well, Michael Jordan, I could understand because he's Michael Jordan. Like, and those are gym shoes. Those are just gym shoes that you wear when you go out and run. But a candle, like, that smells like your nether regions. Like, I mean, I know it doesn't really, but it's just like the absurdity. And even like Michael Jordan's restaurant, I remember it wasn't like that popular. Like his restaurant was like, you know, I think a lot of tourists used to go. Because I remember when I was talking about my job at City News, I remember I would always be walking to work and someone, it was all a lot of times the Japanese tourists would be asking me where the Michael Jordan restaurant was. So it usually wasn't, I don't know. I don't know too many people who went to eat at Michael Jordan's restaurant except you. His gym shoes I get, his jerseys I get, because that embodies who he was as an, who he is as an athlete and who he was at in his heyday. So Gwyneth Paltrow wasn't selling like her dress from the Oscars. She's selling, you know, like products that she supposedly uses, and, you know, overpriced products that she uses where, you know, the average person can't afford. So I don't know what your theory is.
Well, first of all, a shameless confession. I really loved Michael Jordan's restaurant. And my kids were little. I took them. When my nephews came into town, we took them. And we always would sit like, oh, because there was that little booth in the back where it was glass encased. And that's where Jordan would sit when he would come. And so, like, you could look at him while you ate. You know what I mean? So and he was never there when I was there. So I began to wonder, I bet he never comes. yes. So I can kind of relate, like identifying so closely as I do with the Chicago Bulls. But you're right. I think there's more of something of substance in my mind. Maybe it's just my taste and I just don't understand. So I shouldn't be contemptuous of people that I don't understand. How about that, Ramon? I'm going to be woke on that. That's, I think, pretty woke of me. Yeah. So anyway, Gwyneth Paltrow, good luck with your latest endeavor. And it is Cal Penn's bit on Comedy Central. It's hilarious. I urge everybody.
I will watch it.
To check it out. It's really funny. He's very funny, by the way. I don't know if you've been watching all the hosts that have been sitting in.
Yeah, since Trevor Noah. It was one of the Wayans brothers, right? Last week or a few
years. Oh my God, Marlon Wayans.
Pretty funny. I've been watching clips of everybody. And I wonder if it's like an auditioning period for them, like the week that they do it. But yeah, I've been watching little bits.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite?
Minaj. I like the Wayans brother. I saw one of Cal Penn's where the city of Newark got duped into.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Becoming sister cities with a fake Indian town Indian town. So yeah. That was pretty funny. I've just been really busy. So I haven't watched Cal Penn's latest, but I will watch the one on Gwyneth Paltrow
My favorite. I really hope it goes to Leslie Jones, and I know she's a long shot. There's just something about her. She is such an unconventional choice, and she was so sincere, in my opinion. She was so real, and she put it out there. I loved her. My second favorite is Sarah Silverman, who is, in my opinion, just one of the funniest people. But they've all been at Marlon Wayans was hilarious. D.L. Hughley was hilarious. I mean, it's been one great. Part of me just thinks, let's just rotate it every 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah, I think it's been cool just watching it because I think everybody's been doing pretty. I mean, I've seen clips of everybody that you mentioned so far, and everybody so far has been pretty funny. Sarah Silverman, I don't find that funny, but maybe I'm equating it to some of the things she's done in the past, and I start nitpicking. But I don't find her super funny, but she can. I've laughed at some of her jokes. So, but yeah, I think so far everybody's at least had one good bit on that, on the Daily Show.
Yeah. At least one good bit, more than one in almost every occasion. All right. We'll close with this one. You were sort of alluding to the concept of appropriation, when you were talking about, how Gwyneth Paltrow has been given credit for, yoga, inventing yoga. which has only been practiced in India for I don't know how many centuries. So here's a curious one. I don't know if you saw this, but the movie Creed. Have you seen any of the Creed movies?
No, which is kind of weird because I've seen all the Rocky movies and I wanted to see the first Creed when it came out. And I remember I kept saying, I got to watch this. And it just, fell off my radar. But I've been meaning to watch them. I think there's three now. I think this is number three, right? Yeah. Because I know how many there are because I remember when it first came out, I'm like, oh, this is supposed to be Apollo Creed's son or somebody related to him. So I gotta watch the first one because I know like all the Rockies, but I remember my dad and a family friend taking us to see that one where Apollo Creed dies because the guy from the Soviet Union came and like punched him at that big
Dolph fight. Lundgren. Yes.
Yeah. Dolph. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I remember that. I remember that was like a moment where I was like, oh my God, I was traumatized.
Poor Rocky.
And so
poor Creed.
I do want to watch it. So I've been meaning to, so I fell behind on that. But I am going to watch Ted Lasso. I have to.
Okay.
That's just the last, I think it's season three. It's the last one. I'm just going to be starting that. And I just finished You, which I know that you did not watch on Netflix.
No.
It's like season four. It was a little ludicrous. I mean, the whole show was a little crazy. It's about this guy who gets obsessed and he's an obsessed killer. Anyway, it just goes, it gets crazier and crazier. But season four was just was a little weak, but I still watched it. I just finished it this week.
I haven't seen that one, but going back to Creed, I've seen the first two Creeds, not seen the third one. It's the number one movie in the world, Creed. Okay. Michael B. Jordan has turned this into just a powerhouse series for him. He plays Creed and Jonathan Majors plays his rival in this movie. And so I will see it. My wife doesn't particularly want to see it, so I'm going to go with a boyfriend. But here's the thing. I didn't realize this. Monroe, shout out. Monroe Anderson was the one who told me this. I looked it up and it's true. Sylvester Stallone, who was the original Rocky, directed the original Rocky. I think he directed it. Pretty sure he did. He definitely wrote the script. Does not have the rights to Rocky, the Rocky story. He sold those rights early on because he was broke. And he sold it to the original producer of Rocky. And so there's the Creed now is becoming probably even bigger than Rocky. It's a phenomenal. I wouldn't be surprised if there's two more Creeds. Michael Jordan will ride this baby all he can. Michael B. Jordan, not Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And Sylvester Stallone gets nothing for it. Zero. And, Romana, I know this is probably bad of me, but part of me smiles a little bit at that because, first of all, Sylvester Stallone is fabulously wealthy, so it's not like he needs the money, right? He's wealthier than you and I will ever be. But, which isn't saying much, I realize. But when you consider how many black performers down through the years created great music, you know what I'm saying, and never got a nickel from it. It was appropriated from them, or, you know, like Elvis made the money. I just think there's something delightfully ironic that Michael B. Jordan is making fabulous amounts of money and Sylvester Stallone's locked out of it. And it's because he sold the rights. You know what I'm saying, Romani? He sold the rights years ago. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of me. I remember I was amazed when I found out Sylvester Stallone wrote Rocky. And that was pretty incredible for me to think that because by the time I watched Rocky, he was Rambo at that point. So I equated him with Rambo. And so I was like, oh, this guy wrote Rocky? That's pretty impressive. But so at that point, and when I heard that he sold the rights, I guess I didn't feel that bad for him because by that point he was this huge star. So it's one thing if he was like struggling, you'd feel a little bad for him because that is what happened to a lot of these black artists who got culturally appropriated. Nobody ever heard of them You know, some of them died. I don't know if they died. I don't want to say a lot of them died penniless, but a lot of them died a lot less wealthier than the people that took their music or took their ideas and went with it. So, you know, there's part of me, it's just like, oh, it's kind of sad that he was poor and he was down and out and had to sell the rights to Rocky, but he seems to be doing just fine. So I think it's okay. I think it's okay. Yeah. It's not like, you know, it's one thing if he was struggling. I mean, even his, like, wasn't his mom, like, was some, like, psychic, and then his brother would sing songs for his movies. Remember Frank Stallone? He would have a soundtrack to a lot of Rocky movies. He'd be watching a Rocky movie or a Rambo, and then somebody would be singing at the end. And, it, like, you know, he had his whole family in the business. So, you know, they did pretty well. So, you know, you can feel for him a little, but I don't think you have to feel that bad.
Yeah, and I can guarantee he didn't sell the rights to Rambo, because by then he had money, didn't he? So, yeah, I do not feel bad. Part of me does, I must confess. Like, he created it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of split on this. Part of me, like, you know what? The man created it. Even though he doesn't need the money, it's still not right that he's not getting any money. On the other hand, there's some kind of great irony. It's so ironic, or I guess, I don't know, that it's culturally ironic. All right, what goes around comes around. I'm not quite sure I know what how to sum it up. But I must admit, when I heard it, I'm like, wow, how is that possible? And anyway, good for you, Michael B. Jordan. I hope you make fabulous amounts of money. All right, Ramona, someday I hope you make that much money, and then you can finance the Ben Jarofsky Show.
How yeah, we'll come up with a candle.
I think Gwyneth beat us to the punch on that one, but we have to come up with a different scent. I urge everybody to check out Ramona's column, which is going to drop. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's pretty funny and pretty enlightening about her trip to India with my dear friend and her dear husband, Mick Dumke. And there'll be photographs, so that will be dropping in the Sun-Times. By the time you hear this, this podcast, it will be out, because this podcast will drop on Sunday. So I'm looking forward to reading that, Ramona. And yeah, keep up the good work. And thanks so much for coming on the show again. That's a great Ramona Hussein. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.